Let's bring in one half of the Always It's Game Day in Cleveland podcast. He's our Browns beat reporter. He's Daryl Ryder, and he's brought to you courtesy of Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Daryl, on a Browns offseason Tuesday, how are we doing?
I'm fantastic because it's a Browns offseason Tuesday.
That's a good answer. We've gotten there. It's not a Browns in-season Tuesday on the win 3-14. Yeah, that is
I feel like Andy Dufresne right now.
From working the Browns, it feels like the ultimate exhale is we finally made it to the offseason, especially on a year like this year. You always drop the quote, they don't get paid whether they win or lose. But, Daryl, sometimes it's easier to do winning seasons than losing seasons.
Well, if I got paid on that scale, I'd be filing for bankruptcy right about now.
Yeah, that would probably you and me both. That would I could be there right now anyway, but we're in about the same boat with that.
You ain't alone.
Daryl, we just spent the last hour or so sort of breaking down where the top concern for the Browns lie going into this offseason and just with the team going forward. For me, it relies in the front office between Andrew Berry and Paul D. Podesta. Where does it lie for you with options like ownership, the coaching staff, the quarterback situation, where if you got this thing figured out or if they figured out themselves, this team's in the best off position?
They don't have a quarterback, and I don't know that they're going to have a quarterback at the start of next season. I anticipate they'll have a rookie of some sort, whether that is with a first-round pick or a later-round pick, or in addition to them dumpster diving for whatever reclamation project they can find on the scrap heap here. That's the biggest concern, because I honestly believe with a quarterback that the locker room actually believes in, they might actually be able to make something of themselves in 2025. But right now, as it stands, they're dead in the water. The roster has talent on it still, no question about it, but till they find some competent play at that position, I don't have a whole lot of hope for their prospects.
Daryl, on Baskin and Phelps earlier, Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, joined them and essentially laid out the fact that he thinks the biggest issue with this team is ownership in Jimmy Haslam. And it's not the first person I've heard say that. It's been echoed throughout national media and just some of the guests we've had on the station. And again, not a knock to them, but that's just how they feel. Do you feel like some of the hate coming Jimmy Haslam's way, maybe just an easy almost scapegoat for the conversation of he's not been doing good enough since he took over the team and maybe not addressing the real issues?
Well, I mean, the results speak for themselves. When you look at the resume of the Haslam Sports Group since they took control of the Browns franchise in October of 2012, it's not great. They are 72, 132, and 1. They've had 7 last place finishes, 5 full-time head coaches, 5 full-time general managers, made 2 playoff appearances, and have 1 playoff win. So the results are what the results are. The one thing you cannot say about this ownership group is that they go cheap on the roster or they don't provide resources for the team like you hear coming out of some other franchises around the NFL. They spend tens of millions of dollars on that training facility in Berea. They spent over $300 million on this roster. Money is not an object to them when it comes to trying to win. And they have thrown a lot of money at it. They have set a lot of money on fire. They're just not getting any return on their investment. So while it's easy to point to them as being the problem, it's the lack of success is not the result of a lack of effort.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. In a similar vein for Andrew Berry then.
Well, it's a little different.
Yeah, no, I agree.
he's the one buying the groceries that are producing some pretty rancid meals on Sundays.
I'm right. More so, though, in the vein of, like, everyone brings up the fact that Andrew Berry's drafting has been subpar, and I agree with him. Like, you point to Greg Newsome, who's been serviceable, but maybe not a first-round talent. Jed Wills and the disaster that came from that. How much of the incompetence that gets placed on Andrew Berry and that title being thrown around when it comes to his drafting is actually true, in your opinion, versus just not having the first-round talent?
Well, I hold him responsible because he inherited a pretty good roster when he took over.
Yeah.
And everyone was promised sustained success, and he's not achieved it. And he has spent a lot of money in the process, and it has not produced the results. This is the most successful regime that the Browns have had since coming back into the league in 99 from a length standpoint, as well as a winning percentage standpoint. And sadly, they're four games under 500 at 40 and 44 overall. So for an era that was supposed to feature sustained success, for them to be four games under 500 at this juncture is a little ridiculous in my mind. He has swung and missed on the quarterback position, which is the most important position in the world. It has set this franchise back. It destroyed this particular season. He's had some moves that have panned out brilliantly. See the Jerry Jeudy trade. He has seen others that have not. See the second-round pick that he gave up to bring in Elijah Moore. And then, obviously, you know, the massive, the massive cherry on top of this whole thing is the fact that they're going to begin the process of moving on from Deshaun Watson in year four of what was a record-breaking, fully guaranteed contract that they handed out there. So, but he's the one, in my view, that bears the responsibility here for this rebuild going south.
Yeah, and again, I think we're on the same page there. I basically place a lot of the blame on Berry. I think you have a lot of blame to toss around, but he's definitely atop the list right now. He's a guy that you can point to and say, well, not so great. For him, you can look back at his drafts. He's produced guys who have played meaningful time for the Browns, like Isaiah McGuire, Alex Wright. You can put maybe DeJuan Jones in that category, maybe too early. But he's had gems like that. Not gems, but he's had players like that that have played meaningful time, right? Cameron Mitchell even servicing as a cornerback. Like, is there any plus side to that? Or do you look at it and say, well, while the Rams are sitting there drafting Puka Nacua in the fifth round, he's failed to do that. So I guess the late round talent where you found guys that have been good, is that a negative for Berry or a positive? Like, is it a negative he hasn't found it, or a positive that he's at least found guys that have been serviceable, in the most long-winded question I could possibly give you?
It's a negative for me. It's not been good enough. Plain and simple. It's not been good enough. Okay, so he's fine a couple of guys. Well, you can't miss on everyone. Now, granted, there's about six other previous Browns GMs that would like a word on that because they've tried. but, you know, it's just the results have not been what they need to be. He has not had enough hits for this team to maintain the level of competitiveness required to be a contender. So it was nice that he took public accountability for the embarrassment that this season was. But my thing is, go fix it. You made the mess. Get it cleaned up.
Yeah. Darryl Ryder, our Browns beat reporter, with us. Do you think Berry has the ability to fire Kevin Stefanski if he wanted to, as a GM, in the way that it works from top down?
Well, that's not going to happen. Right. I mean, it just doesn't even matter because it's not going to happen. I mean, they have talked about how they're in this together. I am of the belief if one goes, they both go. That's how I view this this partnership. This is not going to be a situation where they're going to get split up. One survives and the other does not. If and when the moment comes where the Haslams decide to fire people again, they'll both go at the same time.
So basically, ownership then holding control of. I mean, they always hold control of both jobs, but in terms of somebody being fired,
they write the checks.
That's all it boils down to at the end of the day,
right? Maybe mean, we that's can, the way it works in business.
They writing extra checks? Can they write extra ones to us? Is that an option?
I'm going to probably say no to that.
I think you'd be correct. Hey, if we can,
I mean, I don't know. I haven't checked their job board at any point. I don't know if they're hiring over there at 76 Lou Groza Boulevard.
No, but you got it all wrong. I don't want to have to do the work.
Oh,
that's where you have it.
You're asking for charitable contributions. Well, they're a little busy trying to build the dome right now, so I don't know that they have any extra cash laying around. I think whatever extra cash they have laying around is going to go to, I don't know, maybe they'll put glossy paint in the dome instead of eggshell. I don't know.
I mean, hey, listen, if Deshaun gets paid $230 million, I can at least try to scrounge a little something, no? Like, I'm just out here looking for anything. Daryl, for you, more important to Myles Garrett, the money that comes with an extension or winning a championship, truly at the end of the day, if you asked him?
Well, he's going to say winning a championship, but let's make no mistake about it that, and I said this the day that this all happened, when he, you know, basically put everyone on notice, that his contract situation was a motivating factor behind it. He does not want to stay here if the franchise is going to continue to, win at the clip that they're currently winning at, right? He does want to go somewhere where he can contribute to a Super Bowl contender / Super Bowl winner. I think we learned this year that the Browns are light years away from that conversation. And they were not nearly as close to that conversation as we all talked ourselves into last offseason, coming off that 11-6 blowout loss to the Houston Texans in the wild card game. So there's that reality. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, he is underpaid at $25 million a year, considering the resume that he has built, and he is looking to get himself a very nice check this offseason in the form of an additional signing bonus for another five-year deal, which I'm going to just guesstimate is going to be in the $180 to $200 million range.
Yeah, that trying to find your way into a basically top-paid non-quarterback, like, deserved a little bit of a push and pull for me, though.
He's the best defensive player in the game.
Yeah, no question.
He should be paid accordingly. But his point still stands that, you know, the reason you talk about the Reggie Whites and the Lawrence Taylors of the world is because they won, right? You know, God bless Joe Thomas. He made the Hall of Fame, but his claim to fame is he never played in a playoff game, right? He's one of very few Hall of Famers to never play in a single NFL playoff game, which just speaks to the consistency and the greatness with which he played his position year in and year out for 11 seasons. So, you know, Joel Bitonio, you know, 6 years, he's a Pro Bowl alternate this year. You know, if he gets, you know, if he ends up being a replacement or whatever, this will be 7 Pro Bowls for him. That helps his Hall of Fame potential resume, but, you know, at least he's played in a couple of playoff games with the Browns, right? But as an interior lineman, it's really, really, really hard to get into the Hall of Fame these days. He certainly will not be a first ballot eligible player to get in. He's going to be one of those guys similar to Clay Matthews Jr., who, you know, is stuck in this seniors thing now and just, you know, couldn't get in.
Yeah.
You know, after years and years and years of debate. So, you know, I do believe that winning matters to Myles as much as the status of being one of the top paid defenders in the league.
All right, Daryl, I'll get you out of here on this. Andrew Berry, when he spoke in his press conference, essentially said up to this point that the Deshaun trade has not been great. I mean, smack in the forehead, no dumb moment. Is that
Hang
the closest?
On, Captain Obvious on line one for everybody. Go ahead.
Is that the closest thing that we get to an apology for Deshaun Watson?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. That's you know, because what else are they going to say, right? You don't want to disrespect Deshaun. You know, it's not like Deshaun went out there and said, "Ooh, please break my shoulder and rupture my Achilles," right? I mean, so it's an unfortunate turn of events. Even more unfortunate, he came back from the shoulder and was the worst quarterback in the NFL for 7 weeks. But yeah, I mean, what else do you want from him, right? There's your acknowledgement. The trade did not work. It's not going to work out. And, you know, the sooner that they begin the process of moving on, which I think that they have, the better off everybody's going to be. So I think that that's the best you're going to get from Andrew Berry. Because to be fair to him, you can't fault him for trying.
Yeah.
And again, to be fair, I personally would not have made the deal. I said it at the time. I would not have made that trade under any circumstances. But I understood why they did it. It was an impulsive decision. It was a panic-driven decision, in my view. Maybe panic's the wrong word. They felt that they were that close, and it was worth the shot. They took the shot. They swung and missed horrifically bad. And so for him just to acknowledge that the trade hasn't worked out, I think that's as close to falling on the sword publicly for that trade as you can expect. And again, I don't know what else fans want Andrew to say beyond that, because it doesn't solve anything. It certainly doesn't bring in the next quarterback. It certainly doesn't relieve them of the remaining obligations on the contract or anything like that. So I thought Andrew did a professional job yesterday from an accountability standpoint, saying it the way it is. He didn't mince words. He didn't make excuses. He not only just with Deshaun, he said, hey, the moves we made this year were not good enough. They did not work out. We did not get the production we needed from them or wanted from them. And so, you know, at that point, I don't know what other pound of flesh you can expect to extract from him in regards to that press conference.
Daryl, good stuff. Appreciate you as always. And enjoy a Wednesday in the Browns offseason tomorrow.
I'm gonna be at the field house. Rumor has it we got a pretty good basketball team in town. I'm gonna go check out what I think will be the game of the season between the Thunder and the Cavaliers, who have won 10 straight games by double digits. So if they win tomorrow night and it's by less than double digits, I'm expecting you to be fielding all kinds of freakout calls because the Cavs didn't win by enough.
Well, Daryl, enjoy watching a winning football team, or a winning team in general, I should say. Appreciate you as always.